We are back. It is another edition of Kevin's Corner. We are slowly approaching, I would say, one of the busier kind of two-week periods of the offseason. Colts players going to get back to work on Monday for their offseason program, usually attendance extremely high during that voluntary portion of it. And then, Eddie, as we record this on Wednesday, April 10th, we're 2 weeks in a day away from the NFL draft. We'll probably get a lot more NFL draft focus coming up next week on the podcast. Last week, right after we recorded, we had the big Stephon Diggs trade from Buffalo to Houston. So I want to talk about that and just kind of the trickle-down effect towards the Colts. And then the Colts are replacing four free agents. I know it might not be the most household of names, but do want to get into right now how that looks from an internal roster standpoint, a couple of outside moves. Do we see anything in the draft on that end? So that'll be the focus today before we get to Twitter questions. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. It's allergy season for me.
Dude, I'm shocked mine has not hit yet. I'm a little nervous. It's only a matter of time. That I hope that doesn't mean it goes deeper into the spring, but allergies in the Masters. You got a Masters pick?
I told you it was Fitzpatrick, remember?
Matt Fitzpatrick. I do like that.
Is this your favorite week, by the way? The Reds aren't eliminated yet from playoff contention. Masters week. You got the national championship on Monday. Draft around the corner.
You know, I just got a text from a former colleague of mine to sum up what I think about this week, and the text is, will tomorrow ever get here? Christmas Eve for me right now. I can't wait. Tiger's going to win by, I would say, 4 or 5.
It only took you a minute 45.
Do you see the shirt? Tiger is back.
Oh, nice.
You know, he seems to be putting fornication on the back burner, it sounds like, based off various reports there. So energy levels should be high. He's going to need it. Got a bad draw. Don't know why the Green Jackets gave him the bad afternoon, morning draw with all the weather. But Tiger's been dealt a lot of blow. That man probably has got more lives than your average animal out there. So, which he is an animal in many places in life. Let's move on. Stephon Diggs, should we start there?
Let's do it.
I respect the Texans a lot. I think it's a swing, but I think it's a swing that, like, people are acting like it's uber risky. I don't think it's that risky. I mean, yeah, they gave him a second-round pick. That's obviously a notable draft pick. They still have the Vikings second-rounder. They have their own. They gave up the Vikings second-rounder. And, you know, if you look at it from a contractual financial statement, you know, standpoint, I should say, they can easily get out of this deal after this season. And I just don't think, I mean, Diggs, yeah, off the field, are you worried about a couple things? Sure. But, like, I don't think this is Andre Johnson physically. I mean, I know late in the year there were some issues, but he still had over 100 catches and 1,200 yards last year. So I don't think we're there. And obviously with Nico Collins and Tank Dell, you know, there's a lot of attention to keep an eye on with Houston. Again, what I respect about Houston is they're taking advantage of C.J. Stroud's situation. You believe in them, understandably so, and you maximize it. They saw what happened at Ohio State when they put a lot around them. You know, they're obviously trying to do the same thing. And really, if you look at it, they did it almost last offseason, realizing it might not be a great edge-rushing draft. Let's in the following year, let's trade up for Will Anderson Jr. They obviously offset Jonathan Greenard's loss with Danielle Hunter. And at some point, and honestly, Buffalo is probably the best example of it, at some point, Houston won't be able to do this stuff. You know, at some point, Kansas City had to trade away Tyreek Hill. At some point, Buffalo's got to trade away Stephon Diggs. At some point, Cincinnati can't keep Chase, Higgins, Boyd, you know, everybody there. So that's where I kind of give a lot of respect to Houston for what they are doing. Obviously, Colts-related, it stresses your biggest question mark and your need even more. That would be the secondary. If you want to relate it back to the Colts. And, you know, again, I've made this baseball analogy before, but what we're seeing with Houston, and I would say even Tennessee and Jacksonville have sniffed this a little bit. Eddie, to use that baseball analogy again, these four teams all walk to the plate right now with zero strikes on them. Some teams walk to the plate with at least one, if not two strikes on them, meaning financially, draft pick wise, they can't swing, or they certainly can't swing at a pitch that's in the dirt. Whereas Houston, Tennessee, Indy, Jacksonville, if they would like, they can get pretty green light. You know, it can be a 3-0 count, and they say swing away at it. And again, not every team is in that boat. So I really respect that by what Houston is doing. And again, I don't think like this is mortgaging them for several years down the road if it doesn't work out well. So I guess that's where I'll start on it. You know, as far as the AFC South as a whole, I think you're seeing a lot of premium position moves. You know, Tennessee was built a bit like Indy, a bit archaic. Tennessee's moves this offseason are, you know, Ridley and Snead related, wide out corner related. They're starting to get a little bit more modern. You know, Jacksonville loses Ridley, offsets with Gabe Davis. You know, I think it's time we consider, you know, interior defensive linemen. And I know Armstead lines up all over, but, you know, that is, I think, a premium position. And obviously Houston with what they've done with Hunter and Diggs there. I guess to fully tie it into Colts, I thought Zaire Franklin had an interesting tweet. And Zaire tweeted, "I see we lost the offseason Super Bowl again. Better luck next year." Yeah, that's just like peak player tweet to the nth degree. And, you know, obviously Zaire has a ton of validity behind that tweet. I would disagree with it a little bit in that I get where he's coming with it, and obviously that was the big kind of, oh my gosh, the Colts have lost the offseason, blah, 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 they've lost the Super Bowl, et cetera, et cetera. Where I would counter that, I would say, well, the issue is the Colts have only had the chance to compete for the Super Bowl two times in the last decade. So I'm not necessarily sitting here standing on a table, go for a grand slam, go for a home run, if you want to continue the baseball analogy, but just kind of get on base. Try to get on, you know, where's the single or double? Where's the raising of the floor at other places? Right now, it's a lot of pressure on your young QB. And I don't think you've gone above and beyond in trying to support him like some other teams have. And this is where the tweaks and the changes to the Chris Ballard operation have never really been there. Like, for example, last year in the draft, Eddie, I really liked the premium position focus early on. But that hasn't been as consistent as I think it needs to be throughout, you know, his tenure. And, you know, I think when you get people in positions of authority, they oftentimes can get there because they do have these core principles that have allowed them to rise. And they're true to them. They stick by them. They're big process-oriented individuals, all of those things. I am a results-can-impact process person, me personally. And we've talked about it a lot here in our local market, so I'll tie it into basketball here lately. But, you know, for us locally, Matt Painter in Purdue and Josh Schertz in Indiana State have been talked about a lot. I find it really fascinating, their backgrounds. For those unfamiliar with Josh Schertz, head coach of Indiana State, now off to St. Louis, had a crazy amount of success at a Division II school called Lincoln Memorial and really ran a lot of Bill Self offense. Visited Bill Self, was kind of mesmerized by what Bill Self was doing, brought that back there. Unbelievable. He goes and visits Brad Stevens and the Celtics one offseason. He comes back to his staff and tells them, oh my gosh, Boston's doing this five out, no real post player. It's beautiful. The spacing's unbelievable. The driving's unbelievable. Let's do it. And the staff looks at him like, dude, we win 30 games every year. Why are you crumbling it up and throwing that away? Matt Painter, unbelievable success. From a non-conference standpoint, from a Big Ten standpoint, you know, all these Sweet 16s and making it to an Elite Eight and really doing things in the Big Ten that we haven't seen in a while. But even he viewed it as, okay, we need to make tweaks. We need to make some changes here. Delegates play calling to other people on the staff. Finds a guy in a portal that wasn't the top 10 guy, but felt like, okay, he's going to help us. Defensively, give us another ball handler, give us some speed, give us some quickness. You know, lineup wise, he's opted to put kind of the defensive minded guys on the bench, and then he went with more of the offensive skill in guys like Camden Heidi and Miles Colvin. He hired an analytics guy in the offseason. Say, you do a deep dive for me. Tell me what we're not doing right. What do we need to change? And I think that all of that is just so important. When you're building these things, there are a lot of Ballard core principles that I agree with. But I think when your results have led to where they are right now, you've got to be willing to make adjustments, to make tweaks, be open-minded to it. Again, you're in a golden financial situation unlike any other. And if you want to continue the baseball analogy for another, you know, limb of the tree, if you will, you know, the Colts offseason moves right now, they're on base of eel, like a drop third strike. I mean, those are the moves they've made, whereas everybody else you could point to and, you know, whatever. It's a single or a double, or it's an attempt to try and do that. So I would say that is where my probably, like, frustration with it lies a little bit of I just think you're putting a lot of pressure on him and on the rookie class in general. You know, they could come away with Brian Thomas at 15 and insert your corner here at 45, 46, and everybody's going to be jumping for joy. But it's like, I mean, that's not a given the rookies produce like that right away.
Right.
You know, we didn't see Quiddy Pay do that as a first-rounder right away. We didn't see Juju Brents do that. Now, there are some guys that do produce, Josh Downs, of course, being a third-round pick that impacted you. But it's just not a slam dunk. It's just not a given. And that's where I do worry about the overall support that you've given him. So I'd say last thing on this, Eddie, is I've mentioned before with Richardson, when I walk away from his 2023 rookie season, I come away thinking I worry a little bit about the long term. You know, can there be staying power into age 28, 29, 30, you know, things like that. But having said that, I'm probably a little bit more thinking, damn, you could get some return on this investment quick. Like, he showed some promise that I'm like, boy, if he all of a sudden can be consistent with that up until, you know, game 17 or something like that, you could really find something here with him. Again, earlier than I previously thought, and that's where I do look at it right now and think, are you missing opportunities? And that would be a question that I would have. Anything Diggs related for you?
The only question I have is, do you think Houston and Tennessee are in, or not Tennessee, Indy are in two different spots?
Two different spots in how they should be building or how their roster looks, or?
Stephen Holder brought this up on Crane Company yesterday. He said something that he feels the Texans are in a different spot because they had the success last year with CJ.
Okay, I got you.
And the Colts haven't had that success yet with Richardson, so it allows them to know and have the confidence like, hey, this guy, we loved him coming in.
Got it,
and
got it,
he
got
went
it.
In yeah. his rookie year and had all this success, and now we feel comfortable that mm-hmm. we can add these pieces around him and be okay
yeah,
with spending the money.
I think that's a good question. They probably are, but again, Eddie, and I don't know, the baseball analogies to me just make so much sense. If you want to call the Diggs move a home run type swing, the Colts swing has been the first time you ever foul tipped the ball in Little League. You know? I mean, the first time you ever foul tip one, like in a barely, like just it goes next to the catcher and literally the parents get on their feet like Barry Bonds just hit home run 73rd. That's what the Colts have done so far. I mean, right now, offensively, it's Flacco and nothing. So that's where, where's the single? Where's the double? You know, just something of note that, yeah, you might not be in this massive win now mode. And then the counter to that is, even if you don't want to go direct support to Richardson, indirectly, where are you at? I mean, it is team running back on defense with all 11. And I just think there's such this, like, bullish belief in continuity that, in a way, at times you're almost like blinded to an outside move or two.
Or is it like him being determined to prove everyone wrong,
yeah,
he being Chris Ballard?
Boy, I don't want to like dive into the ego and the mind too much. That would be such an egotistical thought. I mean, imagine like sitting there in your office and being like, damn it, I'm going to prove everybody wrong. Like, watch this. Yeah. All the haters out there, like, I've got my burner Twitter. Like, I think Ballard is a pretty genuine, nice. I've always had pleasant interactions with him. You know, who knows what he thinks of me behind the scenes, but
damn it, Bowen.
He doesn't. There are people that have been in positions of authority like that, Eddie, that I would say act like that or could act like that. I don't think he's like that. I don't. I mean, that to me is just the wow. It's just wild to even power trip yourself into that sort of mindset. But having said that, that's why I'm probably equally as confused on why not the tweaks and the adjustments and the dips and the little bit here or there. It's just, it's a little confusing to me. And again, the blinded by the continuity and the, well, there's risk when you get players outside of your own building. Well, sure, there's risk in that as well, but there also can be reward, you know?
DeForest Buckner, prime example.
So that's where I would push back on that. So, you know, right now, AFC South as a whole, I think Houston deserves to be on a tier. I don't think it's a massive gap, but I think they are on a tier, and certainly DeMeco Ryans might have some personalities to keep in check in how Stephon Diggs has acted, but maybe the change of scenery, and I don't know. I could probably only live in Buffalo for a few years, but I'm going to be totally honest. So who knows? Maybe going to Houston will open that up for him. So I got no more on the Diggs front unless you do.
Does this put the Colts as the worst team in terms of skill position players in the conference?
Yeah,
in
I have thought about
the division?
That. Yeah. Probably. Yeah. You know, Tennessee, if you look at it, what, that's Pollard, Ridley, and Hopkins. I don't know.
Chig Okonkwo.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Tennessee and Indy you kind of put right there. You know, if I was giving out letter grades, I'd call Houston probably a solid A. You know, Jacksonville probably like a B. B, yeah, probably a B. And then you get Colts, Titans, and you're probably looking like the C-plus-ish range. Again, Taylor is an incredible talent, but I just would like to see a little bit more support for the young kid.
You wrote about this on 1075thefan.com about replacing free agents. Now, the free agents that the Colts have lost this season of note, Gardner Minshew, backup quarterback, replaced with Joe Flacco, and Zach Moss, that has yet to be replaced, but they did retain Trey Sermon, and they still have Tyler Goodson. And Evan Hull is returning from injury.
Yeah, let's just go in order. Four guys outside of the building. Eddie, you mentioned Flacco for Minshew. This is the easiest, like, player A gone, player B in. I mean, it's obvious, obviously, what you're getting with Flacco. Certainly a little bit more of a big arm. You know, not as much familiarity maybe with Shane Steichen. Maybe a little bit more volatile as a player, which can be good and bad. You know, certainly there's an ability to throw it down the field, but there's an ability to have some bigger interception numbers as well. So that's your obvious one. You know, I am curious to see if they'll do anything backup running back-wise. You know, Zach Moss is gone. He obviously was clearly the backup. You mentioned Trey Sermon, Tyler Goodson, Evan Hull. You know, that to me, coupled with like a day three pick, would be enough. Maybe you don't need a day three pick. I mean, certainly it's a position where unheralded resumes have often provided nice backup spots in the NFL, but, you know, there was that reported interest in A.J. Dillon. You know, do you look at the A.J. Dillon, the reported interest in Danielle Hunter, do you look at that as they view those as needs? Or do they view that as, no, those players are attractive to us at the right price? You know, that I think that's an interesting one to kind of view. So, running back is up in the air. And again, Taylor, just health-wise, what is he? Has he reached a stage where these now nicks and bruises start to be more there, or is he, you know, back to the crazy durable self he was at Wisconsin in those first couple years in the league? So I think that's a question you would have. The other two, very under the radar, very, I should say, kind of low on the totem pole in terms of free agents that left and the roles they played, but it would be Isaiah McKenzie now with the Giants, and then Jake Martin, defensive end now with the Bears. You know, for McKenzie, Eddie, the experience wasn't much. Offensively, I was surprised how little of a role he played. He simply, you could probably expand it to Josh Downs. You know, his return duties were probably more of the thing he did. And I guess that is something I'm kind of interested in. Like, what do you do from a return standpoint, and how do the rule changes impact that? You know, does it allow for different body types to be the returners? You know, Dallas Flowers is also coming off a torn Achilles. You know, do you want him in that role? Is he, you know, back to that full return man speed health? So that was a loss. And then the other one was Jake Martin. You know, obviously he's not a frontline name. Now, Martin, you know, did play around a dozen snaps a game. I think the name to watch here, Eddie, in this group is Isaiah Land. Sixth round pick out of Florida A&M of Dallas last year. Waiver claimed by the Colts at the end of the preseason. I mean, think about deep position groups in the NFL. You would call Dallas's defensive line that. And he certainly, you know, gives a body type that I think offers some entry to the staff. He put up some big numbers at Florida A&M, so I think that'll be interesting to see. Do you get anything from that group? Because, you know, you are, or so far you've been really team running back, and you have a lot of body types there. We'll see if that changes in the first 100 picks or so coming up in a few weeks. The team did resign Jannard Avery, so maybe he factors into that as well. But Land is a name to watch. But certainly at running back and probably here at edge rush, you could see the draft happen. I guess a quarterback, does a fourth arm come in here? Kellen Mond is no longer here. You know, do you want a fourth arm to compete with Ellinger for that third spot? How do you handle that third spot with the practice squad and all that? That'll be something to watch.
Wonder if Titus Leo's
another name. Yeah, coming off the injury.
Yeah.
That is a good point to make. You know, there are a couple of those day three rookies from last year. Jake Witt coming off IR. Daniel Scott coming off IR at safety. You know, they're really high on Daniel Scott. I'm like, okay, I can see that, but I mean, still a spring ACL. I mean,
yeah.
You know, he practiced what? Did he even get an OTA in? I would have to go back and look exactly when he tore that. You know, that's a lot to all of a sudden ask him to, whatever, line up next to Julian Blackman for 17 straight weeks. So you know, some of those injured guys are storylines to watch as we get to the offseason program next week.
Only four Twitter questions. Are you ready for them?
I am ready.
Up first is Jason. Does the Stephon Diggs trade influence Chris Ballard's approach in the draft? Do you want to know Malik Nabers coming to Indy?
Yeah, and let's hit on that Nabers. I'm interested kind of what the thought is. You know, have you seen a mock where Nabers gets past six?
No.
You know, he had the arrest on Bourbon Street with a gun. Those charges were dropped, and that was 14 months ago. It's not like that happened yesterday. So I don't – is this just like draft talk, April 10th, change the year every year? CJ Stroud's fallen, the S test, you know? Like, is this just the one prospect every year that this happens to? And, you know, someone asked me, like, could the Colts be bluffing here? I don't get what you'd be bluffing by. Like, is there a team at – let's say Nabers gets a 7 or 8. Is there a team that sits here at 7 or 8? It's like, guys, we got to take him now. The Colts are going to take him. They're going to trade up.
Huh.
I don't like.
I mean, does he even make it past five with the Chargers?
Right. Now, again, let's go back to some of the Ballard comments from earlier this offseason. The first thing he said in terms of the biggest need for his team moving forward is we need to get more explosive. And I asked him directly.
He would certainly fit that bill.
Certainly. And I asked him directly, does that just mean Anthony Richardson's presence? You know, Richardson naturally makes you a more explosive offense. There's no denying that. But is it Richardson and on top of that? And, you know, he specifically mentioned, you know, yards after catch guy, which, again, I could not agree with more. But, man, a trade up from, let's just say, like 15 to 8, that'd be the wildest thing Bauer's ever done. You know, I tried to go through to my head earlier today. He's now at 7 drafts, right? Trading up in round 1, 2, or 3. Twice in the history.
Taylor and who was the other one?
Nick Cross.
Yeah.
And Taylor was 3 spots. Now, if you want to play out the Taylor thing, what is Taylor?
Blue chip player, as Rick Venturi would call him.
And a home run hitter. Yeah. An explosive playmaker. So that, again, kind of fits. So part of me is like, okay, we can oftentimes get with Ballard and like, oh, it's Ballard. Everything he does is gold. Everything he does is absolute poop. I feel like I say poop more because Rosie likes to say the word. And I used to.
I was about to say, it's probably because you have kids.
Yeah. I don't know. My lingo, I feel like, is just changing. And it's not that black and white with Ballard. Like, you can objectively look at it. So I'm trying to do that with the Nabers thing. I'm like, okay, what can we look at? He said they need to be more explosive. They haven't added anything in that element. He does have a rookie contract quarterback. He's acknowledged that you can do things differently when you have a rookie contract quarterback. Do we see anything? So, again, just based off everything you're hearing, it doesn't seem like anyway Malik Nabers is there, but I'm glad you brought that up. What was the question?
One note here. It was Jason's question. Does the Stephon Diggs trade influence Ballard's approach in the draft?
Yeah, I would say no. But again, just in general, it was your biggest weakness before the Diggs trade happened anyways, right?
Yeah.
One of, if not your. And it's a pass-happy league, so you draft those positions. And that's why I agreed with last year. Quarterback, corner, wideout, offensive tackle, the first four picks. Like, all that checks to me in terms of premium picks should go to premium positions.
Remember 2 years ago, they worked out Desmond Ridder, and then, but realistically, they were there to see Alec Pierce, but they just didn't want to tell anybody.
Yeah, but Neighbors is coming here. You know?
I agree. Like, you still talk to Neighbors, but maybe they're doing a little bit of a deep dive on Brian Thomas at the same time with this visit. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting.
Zach is up next. Chris Ballard's frugal nature in free agency has been extremely strange considering his quarterback is on a rookie deal. Is Jim Irsay telling him not to spend? I can't think of any other reason to not at least try something different, especially considering that that his seat has to be getting warmer. Hope all is well with you, Rosie, Max, and Maddie. By the way, have either kid dropped a curse word yet?
No. I mean, not in your general definitions of curse words.
Okay.
I mean, we think bud is like saying F-U-C, whatever.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. You know, we say it and then we laugh and then we, think it's the funniest thing in the world. I'm like, should I reprimand or should I laugh? Which is a battle I fight a lot, I feel like, as a parent. Thank you, Zach, for that. Hope all is well in your world. Appreciate you sending in a question. Yeah, I mean, Irsay seems rather content, right?
Well, we don't know.
Well, I would say this. I think Irsay was pretty darn, I mean, hell, he called him the greatest hire of the 21st century.
That's true.
So Irsay wants that to work out. I mean, whether Jim wants to admit it or not, he's had failing hires lately. So that's where, he wants this to work. And obviously it feels like Chris and Shane are on a good page and all of that. But I think I've said it from really for the past couple of months now, I do think the seat is a little bit warmer internally than I thought it was. Again, I think it, to go back to our seat warmer analogy, you got the three levels. I've always thought we should be on two or three. And I feel like we've at least turned it on. And we'll see how it plays out. But that's where I feel like we're at with it. And that's why I was also curious, like, would that lead to anything different from an activity standpoint this offseason? So far, you would say no.
Flippin asks, could this lack of investment with a rookie quarterback contract signal how Chris Ballard feels about Anthony Richardson? I think he's just being stingy, but would like to hear your thoughts.
Kind of go back to, I think there's been multiple reports that Ballard is high on Richardson and the staff is high on him. If they would have made the move for Danielle Hunter, Eddie, I think everybody would be sitting here being like, oh, wow, there's the big move and there's, indirect support for him and those sorts of things. So it almost seems like with Richardson and the rookie quarterbacks, and you were asking me this earlier, I guess, with the Stroud thing, if you're confident in the guy, then you push all your chips in. But if you're not confident with the guy or you're uncertain on the guy is probably the better way to put it, then you don't touch any of your chips. I'm like, you can still throw some chips in. Because, again, you have this kind of three-year window where the risk is not the same risk it'll be when he's 27, 28. And that's where you can get away with some stuff. And that's where I would like to have seen a little bit more activity from the veteran standpoint earlier this offseason. I don't think it means like DEFCON, it's the end of the world, nothing can happen. It puts more pressure on the draft. It puts more pressure on early returns from the draft. And that's where, just look at it from the depth standpoint. What happened when Michael Pittman Jr. went down last season?
They couldn't score.
What happened when Julian Blackman went down last season?
They gave up big plays.
And right now your team run it back of both those position groups.
Yeah.
You've re-signed both, but your team run it back. So again, you're continuing to put pressure on these guys to stay healthy, frankly, and just continue to produce like they have. Raising the floor with some depth that you feel like you can trust right away, I think would do wonders.
A word Kevin Pritchard likes to use is optionality.
Optionality. Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like...
I like that word.
With the 17-game season, and you're trying to make the playoffs, and you're trying to make a run to be on the top of the hill or on top of the mountain, you would think you would want as many ingredients to work with. That way you can salvage whatever you have and be able to be more fresh throughout the course of the season.
I agree wholeheartedly with that. And all I would add this, Eddie, I've not seen the AFC South look like this 1-3 with four not being a laughingstock in years.
Yep.
I mean, I think there is a legit nature to what 1, 2, and 3 look like. And I've always thought the AFC South, for the most part, you know, even late Gregson era, hell, maybe more, mostly Gregson era into the Ballard era, it's been the laughingstock. And I just don't view it like that at all. So I just think it's tougher. You know, the days of whatever, a pencil in, you know, what Gregson won 16 in a row, right, against AFC South?
Yeah.
You know, you're not obviously sniffing that. Hell, you haven't won in Jacksonville probably since.
Final Twitter question comes from Matt. Colts better get very good on the back end or dominant in the pass rush real quick with Houston's offense.
Yeah, that is this is where I kind of go with that front. You know, what can that D-line do for you? What does Charlie Partridge do for you? I mean, right now, if you're going to put top newcomers for the Colts, you'd put the D-line coach, right?
You'd have to, right?
I mean, does Isaiah Land have some secret ingredient? Do you get – I mean – we could be looking at it, I guess, officially. We'll find out here in a few weeks whether it's a contract year for Kwity Paye or not. Do you get something there? Contract years for him and Dio? You know, does Dallas Turner fall? To me, that would be a dream scenario. Those are, I think, some of the big questions you have is, does that front take the consistent pressure jump? That is a huge question I have. And can that, because if you're going to tell me, Eddie, you want your front to be good or you want your back end to be good, you have to pick one or the other. I'd say front. I'd rather have that be the constant.
Yeah.
You got anything else?
I don't think so.
Tiger Woods, Jordan Spieth, Russell Henley.
What's your Finau, Masters pick?
Corey Connors. I do like Fitzpatrick a little. Tiger or Spieth? Yourself?
I told you.
Ian Woosnam.
Who?
Jose Maria Olazabal.
Who?
Bernhard Longo.
I just think you're speaking French now.
I believe German, right, for Mr. Longer?
I don't know.
So Fitzpatrick?
Yeah, that's who I picked, whatever that was, a month ago.
I like that.
Gotta stick by it.
I hope the allergies go better for you.
Are we going to be talking about Pacers play-in or Pacers playoffs?
Playoffs. 7-game series. Yeah. For sure, right? You got to fall on your face at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. A really nice stretch here, winning 3 in a row. I thought that Miami game was... I don't want to read too much into it, but like their biggest regular season moments this year, the closest thing you would get to the playoffs, in-season games against Boston and Milwaukee, and then that game Sunday against a healthy Heat team.
Yeah.
They won. So...
Now, if that game goes 5 more minutes, I don't think that's the case.
Well, sure, but...
That's why they only play 48, not 53.
48, sir. He is Eddie Garrison. I'm Kevin Bowen. Everybody have a great week. Masters week is here. Rejoice. Heaven. Christmas. Easter. It's a beautiful time of year. Enjoy.